Chapter 25. Xenos Nekrochuk. Endgame. The Blank-Eyed Man. We left the firefight behind us and plunged through the Tetragate. Beckwin, Midas and I, racing as fast as we could through the disorienting spirals and imbricating segments of the dying Ceruthi edifice. As we ran, I reported the situation to Fleet Command, but had no reply or way of knowing if they'd understood me. Then I tried Titus Endor, but the Vox was dead. Moving at speed, the place became even more of a four-dimensional maze, but I had in my mind now the engram I had taken from Datso, the memory trace of the route to the Xenos Nekrochuk he had ripped from the block. By my estimation, and it could hardly be trusted, we were approaching the heart of the edifice. Perhaps not the physical or geographic heart, but that part of the dimensional construct buried most deeply in the interlocking lamina of warped space and time. There were more Ceruthi here, skittering and clicking around on their silver limb braces without purpose or response. The smell of licorice filled the warm, glowing tunnels and tiled chambers. We heard screaming ahead of us and the thump of gunfire.
"Titus! Titus! It's Eisenhorn! Do you read?"
The Vox coughed into life.
"Gregor, for the love of the Emperor, I need—"
It broke again. More shots. We hurried through a tetragate and almost at once had to dive for cover as lasfire flurried around us. The chamber we had entered was by no means the largest we had found in the place, but it was singular. Dark and gloomy, it lacked the radiance that shone from the walls and floors elsewhere. The lustrous material that composed the rest of the edifice was here, grey and dissected, as if dead. Another block, like the one Haldane had been propped up against but many times the size, rose from the ashy floor, streaked with oily greenish matter that ran down its flanks and pooled at the base. An asymmetrical shelf jutted from it, just above the height of an average human, and a blue octahedron sat upon it, glowing internally. The Xenos Nekrochuk. Datso's engram immediately confirmed it. The chamber stank with its evil, the licorice smell, so rich and cloying it made us gag. Behind and above the main pillar, warped sculptures of metal, bone, and other organic materials grew from the walls and curving roof. Vicious hooks on filthy chains dangled from these outgrowths. This was not Ceruthi handiwork, but a touch of pure chaos, spawned by the Nekrochuk, infecting the Xenos fabric of its sanctum. Smaller pillars, irregular and unmatched, dotted the floor around the main block. In between them, a gunfight was raging. The three of us ran from the exposure of the lit tetragate and found shelter behind the nearest of the smaller blocks. Las shots wove in and out of the stone shapes, ricocheting and rebounding.
"Titus! Gregor!"
He was 20 meters away, a third of the way into the chamber, huddled behind a block and firing his las pistol at figures closer to the Nekrochuk's resting place. I glimpsed Locke and 8 or 9 heretic troopers. I looked to either side of me at Beckwin and Midas.
"Choose your targets," I told them.
We began to fire in support of Endor, dropping at least one of the heretics. As they reeled from the salvo, Endor leapt up and ran forward. A las shot clipped him and blew him back against a stone upright. I ran forward myself, firing my bolt pistol, which I had braced in both hands. I blew chunks from the blocks ahead of me and hit at least one of the enemy gunners. I reached Endor. He was wounded in the chest. It would be fatal if we couldn't get him clear quickly. I pulled him into cover and waited while Beckwin ran up through the rows to my side.
"Pressure here,"
I said, showing her, my hands wet with my old friend's blood. She did as she was told. I became aware of thunderous noises from beyond the chamber. The place shook. More thunder rolled, and a section of the curved ceiling suddenly splintered and collapsed, cascading wreckage down, allowing cold exterior light to shaft in. A second later, 3 more holes ruptured and burst through the roof, and from outside I could hear the muffled hammering of bombardment.
"Midas!"
He was already moving up to my left, ditching his needle rifle for the pistols in the tight confines. Lethal Glavian needles hissed through the air. The ground continued to shake. A further section of roof came down. Leaving Endor with Beckwin, I ducked from pillar to pillar, braving the deluge of shots. Midas and I switched to our earpiece links in Glossier.
"Thorn ushers Aegis, a tempest sinister."
"Aegis attending. Tempest in 3.
I counted the 3 beats and ran forward as Midas hurled his frag grenade to my left before opening fire with both pistols. The flash and bang of the blast obscured the bombardment outside for a moment. A heretic was flung upwards, limbs flailing, and glanced brokenly off a pillar before hitting the ground. Midas's tempest of covering confusion had allowed me to get within 10 meters of Locke. I could no longer see him, however. Keeping my grip on my bolt pistol, I drew my power sword in my left hand and came around the block. Locke and one of his men had chosen the exact same moment to plough forward into me. We broke from cover and came face to face in the narrow gap between pillars. My pistol's first shot missed the lunging Locke and tore the left arm off his accomplice. Before the wailing man had even hit the ground, Locke's las pistol had put a round through the meat of my right arm. A long-bladed dagger flashed forward in his other hand. We slammed into each other. I tried to sweep my power sword around, but it struck something, and Locke sidestepped. The basket hilt of his dagger smashed into my face and knocked me over onto my back. With a grin that he knew I could never copy, he raised his las pistol to fire down into my brain. 2 tons of Xenos quarried stone pillar sliced through at hip height by my power blade, crushed him into the flaking ground. I rose. Gorgone Locke was still alive. His belly and pelvis were smashed under the fallen pillar, and his arms were pinned. He gazed up at me through blinking, bewildered eyes. Gorgone Locke, in the eyes of the Holy Inquisition, you are thrice damned by action, association, and belief, I said, beginning the catechism of abolition.
No,
he whispered. As I completed the exclamation, I cut the mark of heresy into the flesh of his brow with the tip of my sword. By the time I had finished, he was dead from his crush injuries. The shattering chamber still shook. On their long chains, the hooks swung. Dust and fragments dribbled down from the tears in the roof, falling through the bars of cold light. I reached down and found the pearl polyhedron in Locke's blood-soaked coat. The primer. I slipped it into my pocket and turned to see Midas approaching.
"The last of his rats have fled," he said, holstering his pistols. He looked down at the dead shipmaster. "So perish all heretics, eh?"
I reached up with one hand to take the Xenos Necrotuke from its shelf and found myself unable to move. Some enormous psychic force froze me rigid.
"So perish all heretics indeed," said a voice. "Turn him so he can see me."
Involuntarily, I swung round, my hand still raised in the act of reaching out. I saw Midas, also paralyzed and rigid, his dark features locked in a rictus of dismay. Conrad Molitor, my brother Inquisitor, was standing before me, smiling. His 3 hooded servants were at his side.
"Such valor, Gregor! Such dedication! I thought you'd be the one to find the prize."
I tried to answer, but my mouth refused to obey me. Spittle bubbled between my clenched teeth. Molitor looked around at his cowled companions.
"Let him speak," he said.
The psychic constraints on my voice slackened. Speech was still an effort.
"What are you doing, Molitor?"
"Recovering the priceless Necrotuke, of course. We really, really can't have you destroying another copy now, can we?"
"We?"
"There are many who believe mankind will benefit more from the study of this artifact than from its destruction. I have come to safeguard those interests."
Rorkan will never allow. You will burn for—"
"My estimable Lord Brother Rorkan will never know. Feel how this place quakes. See how the roof splinters and collapses. 10 minutes ago, I signaled to the fleet that the primary objective was achieved. I gave the code for Sanction Extremis. They believe the Necrotuke had been found and safely disposed of. Our forces are withdrawing, with all haste. The batteries of the fleet have begun to level these Xenos places. No one will know that the divine Necrotuke has been carried off safely. Not a shred of evidence will survive the bombardment. Not a shred of evidence. Nor any voice of dissent."
His yellow-pupiled eyes regarded me.
"How brave of you to give your life in the assault on 56 Izar. Your name will be remembered on the roll of honor, I assure you. I'll see to that myself."
"Bastard!"
I fought with my mind to break free, but it was impossible. This was not Molitor's hold on me, one of his retainers, or all 3 in concert, supremely powerful. "Fetch it for me," Molitor said to one of his men, gesturing to the Necrochuk with a wave of his checked sleeve. "We would be well to leave promptly." The hammering bombardment was now a perpetual shaking roar. The robed figure slid forward and took down the blue octahedron, cupping it in elegant, long-nailed fingers. He seemed to study it and looked round at Molitor.
"It is useless," he said.
"What?"
"Unreadable. Locked within an impenetrable Xenos language code."
Molitor stammered.
"No! Impossible! Break the code!"
"Would that I could. It is beyond even my ability."
"There must be a means of translation."
The hooded man holding the Necrochuk looked round at me.
"He has a primer. The only primer. He's trying not to think about it, but I can see it in his mind. Look in his coat pocket."
The smile returned to Molitor's face. He came close to me, reaching out a hand towards my coat.
"Devious to the last, Gregor. You whoreson wretch."
A Lazround blew his hand off at the wrist. Molitor screamed and stumbled back, clutching his smoking stump. Beckwin, her face pursed grimly, her las carbine at her shoulder and aimed at his heart, appeared beside me.
"Kill them! Kill them!"
Molitor screamed. I felt the immediate pressure of the psychic vice tightening to finish me. Then I reeled away, freed. The psychic blank of Beckwin's untouchable nature shielded me now she was at my side. The servant holding the Necrochuk took a step backwards in surprise. Molitor, frantic with pain and anger, saw that his powerful psychic was thwarted somehow and yelled,
"Albert! Albara! The hearts!"
Code words. Trigger words. The pair of servants who had remained by his side sprang forward, their robes shredding away. Arcoflagellants. Heretics reprogrammed and rebuilt with augmetics and bionics to serve as murderous slaves. The trigger words woke them from their calming states of bliss and plunged them into maniacal rages. Out of their robes they were foul, hunched things, encrusted with crude surgical implants and sacred charms. Their hands were lashing clutches of electro-whips, their eyes dull, bulbous orbits under the rims of the tarnished pacifier helmets bolted to their skulls. Midas, Beckwin, and I fired our weapons together, raking them with punishment as they charged forward. The damage they suffered was immense, but still they came on, their bodies pumped with intoxicating adrenal fluid, pain blockers and frenzy-inducing chemical stimulants. They didn't feel what we were doing to them. One was just an arm's length from me when my desperate rain of bolts finally defeated it. A shot exploded the armored matrix of chemical dispensers on its shoulder, spraying fluid into the air. In a second, it fell convulsing to the ground at our feet, as the damage robbed it of its drug source and left nothing but agony behind. The other barely felt the punctures of Midas's two subtle needles. Frantically, we split to either side, out of its path. Braying and thrashing its whip limbs, it pounded after Midas, who ducked left and right between pillars, trying to evade it. Only his Glavian-bred grace and speed kept him out of its inexorably advancing grip. He knew he had seconds left. Beckwin and I were moving, but there was precious little we could do. Midas pulled off his pouch of grenades, priming one as he twisted and sidestepped between the pillars, scarcely avoiding a withering lash of flexible metal whips that scored gouges in the stone. Midas feinted left and then threw himself directly at the beast, snagging the strap of his pouch around its neck as he vaulted over its shoulder head first. The grenades detonated in one stunning flash and atomized the ravening man-beast. Caught in the shockwave, Midas was thrown into a pillar and dropped unconscious.
"Eisenhorn! Eisenhorn!"
Molitor was wailing as he and his remaining servant hunted for me. His voice was cracking with pain and fury. "Stay at my side," I told Beckwin as we ran deeper into the chamber. "That psychic can't touch me while I'm close to you." Half the ceiling and a significant part of the wall blew in. For a second, the air was solid with billowing orange fire. Deafened, our skins scorched by the blast, Beckwin and I were back on our feet in a moment. The chamber was open to the sky now, and cold white light poured in, heavy with smoke.
"Come on!"
Together we scrambled towards the blast-damaged wall, picking our way up the smouldering slope of broken stone and whatever material the Ceruthi used for construction. This material was fused and bubbling, like plastic or flesh. We headed for the light. We emerged high on the curving upper face of the Ceruthi edifice. It was cold, and the wind that came across the segmented ridges of the polished white roof was brisk and full of the odors of smoke, physoline, and promethium. We were at a dizzying height. The pearly flanks of the vast structure arced away to a ground far below, and the surface was hard and polished, like ice. Beckwin slipped, and I managed to grab her before she slid away down the curve. From up here, high in the alien sky, we could see across the lakes of fire and the vast smoke banks that roiled away for hundreds of kilometers. We could see flocks of troop ships soaring up and away through the smoke cover towards the parent ships in orbit. On the flats of white mud far beneath us, Imperial troops ran to waiting dropships, discarding packs and helmets and even weapons in their haste to leave. Tanks and armored carriers wallowed and puffed through the wet mud and up onto the tongue-like ramps of heavy lifters. Shells and lasfire flickered across the lakes and mud as the remaining heretic forces fought on heedless. Lances and forks of dazzling energy bit down from the clouds, murdering the landscape. Obeying Molitor's instructions to the letter, Admiral Spatian was leveling the area. All five of us Inquisitors, along with Seinwolf and Key Deathwatch, and selected officers of the invasion force, had been given the code words to unleash this doom. Molitor had sealed our fate. Once given, sanction extremis could not be revoked, even if my vox had been working, instead of crippled by the electromagnetic bursts that accompanied every orbital strike. As per the battle plans, Spatian was systematically wasting the invasion site as fast as possible, even at the cost of his own retreating ground forces. Another Ceruthi edifice, 20 kilometers away, died. Shaped in a form that suggested a nautilus shell, its opalescent curves were cracked and split by blue-hot heavy lasers. The die-straight beams came down through the clouds from ships so far up they were invisible, and tore through the edifice like testamental judgment. Waves of fighter bombers swept in, sowing payloads of munitions that bloomed in rippling seas of explosions. Guided warheads, sleek like airborne sharks, whined overhead on the last stage of their first and final journey from starship to target. The edifice ruptured and blew out. Light shock lit the hemisphere. A towering column of white ash smoke rose, folding into a 15-kilometer torus-shaped cloud. The sight was stunning. Shocking. Beckwin and I gazed at it. A few heartbeats later, it was repeated behind us, 40 kilometers distant, as another Ceruthi edifice was annihilated. The edifice on whose smoothly curving upper surfaces we now stood was undoubtedly going to go the same way soon. Even now, I knew, the coordinates were being loaded into the fleet's gunnery servitors. We ran along the lip of another curved segment. Afterburners red against the black smoke, more dropships came in, heading towards cheering, gesticulating huddles of Myapwaya infantry out on the flats. I was astounded at the selfless courage of the dropship crews. Spatian's bombardment wasn't waiting for them to move in and pull out. They were risking everything to make the surface run and retrieve as many troopers as they could. "Gregor!" Beckwin shouted in my ear. I turned. Down the shell-form span of the roof behind us, Molitor and his henchmen had appeared out of the blast hole. Unsteady, they scrambled up after us. A las shot whined past me, kissing the pearly surface and leaving a burn scar.
"The primer, you horse and bastard! Give me the primer!"
Molitor yelled. I gave him a full clip of bolt rounds instead. The first of the thundering tracer shots splintered chunks out of the edifice roof. Then I hit and exploded his left thigh, his belly, and his throat. Conrad Molitor bucked and twitched as the rounds tore through him, and then fell. His mauled body slid down the curve of the roof and disappeared, leaving a smear of blood behind it. His henchmen advanced, heedless of the shots, throwing off his hooded robe. He was naked beneath it, tall, well-muscled, with a golden cast to his skin. His face was handsome, and tiny residual horns sprouted from his skull. His eyes were blank. My prophetic dreams were made flesh. Terror seized me, turned my heart inside out.